Welcome to the Move Without Limits podcast, brought to you by Reload Physical Therapy and Fitness. This is where we think different to move different.
And action.
So this is our first time doing a live video podcast, and it's a pleasure and an honor to have Dr. Howard Lux as our first guest to this lovely little setup that we put together in the last 15 minutes.
Welcome to Move Without Limits, and thank you for getting us out of the closet that we normally record in.
My pleasure. It's good to be here.
So Dr. Lux is an orthopedic surgeon, and he practices out of Westchester. And I think I'm going to let you do an intro on your history, but it's just everything that you say is everything that we love and that we preach to our clients. So when we got a chance to connect with you, we're like, we have to bring him down here. We have to learn from you, connect with you, work out with you, all the things that you post. So I'm going to let you give our audience a little background on who you are, how you got into the medical field, and why you look at healthcare so differently than what most other physicians do.
Perfect. So I was seeing an orthopedist growing up more than I saw my pediatrician. So I think this was just natural after I went to medical school to become an orthopedist. Many patients in my office, when I asked them, you know, if they're active and what sports they enjoy, they said, yeah, I played baseball, basketball, and tennis. And so I said, when was the last time you played? They said, high school. But that's not me. I want to continue being active and playing sports with my kids as long as I can. And I'm doing everything in my lifestyle to encourage that. You know, I have a few things that are different in how I approach patients. One, most adult atraumatic shoulder pain, knee pain, and joint pain is just a symptom of another process. So whether it be poor metabolic health or being sedentary or part of sarcopenia, which is, I'm sure, something that we're going to dive into, right? The loss of muscle mass that we suffer from because of aging and genetics and lack of activity has horrendous downsides. So not only do I push this to my patients in terms of its importance, but I feel like I have to walk the walk as well. You know, I'm doing it to maintain my lifestyle, but I don't want to be the sedentary orthopedist trying to tell people how to live their life. Also, along the way, I realized that osteoarthritic patients, the ones who did better, were the ones who were more active. Not only did they move more, but these were also the stronger ones. If you look at a typical knee replacement patient, you know, it's typically not a fit, active person. Yes, genetics has a role in this disease too. So you will see fit, active people with degenerating knees, but those fit, strong people are too busy being active to be on your operating room table. And just because you have severe arthritis, it doesn't mean you're going to have severe pain. So you can have bone-on-bone people who are pounding their way out there in the gym with very little discomfort, yet you can have others with poor metabolic health who have mild disease, yet terrific pain. So I started to see how our overall health was more intertwined with orthopedics than anyone is being taught or anyone understands. And so over the last, I'd say, decade or more, I've started to approach how I practice medicine and orthopedic surgery differently.
Okay. What you said before was like you wanted to create the life that you can continue to do all the things. And that's what we see a lot on social media, where we wanted to move away from let's just preach and teach and tell people all these things that they need to do, but we want to lead by example. And I think especially you, seeing you work in that realm where you're doing surgery for the knees and shoulders and actually saying that, hey, the way to actually have a healthy knee is to stay active and actually run and exercise and strength train. I think that's what more people need to see and be inspired by, instead of just be told, hey, you need to exercise, you need to strength train, you need to do cardio. Because it is like everyone knows that already, right?
Right.
But how do people do it safely, and how do people have the guidance and the support to do so?
Right, right. I think it starts with recognition. In my book that I wrote, it connected the dots for people to a large extent. That's why it was so popular, because they've always been told to move more, lift some heavy things, have a sense of purpose, socialize, etc. But they didn't understand how it interfaced with our bodies, right? We are interconnected, very complex beings. It was drawing those connections and associations for people that really led a lot to practice what that book preaches.
How many aha moments have you seen in front of you? Or do you think people have more resistance to this idea of you can train it?
Oh my God. These are my favorite wins in the office, and they happen every week. I can take, a 60-year-old with a belly, thin legs, a little out of shape, short of breath, going upstairs, who comes in with knee pain, and in 6 months, they don't have knee pain anymore. I haven't operated on them. I haven't injected anything into them. They bought into the understanding of how their overall health and fitness level is affecting their joint pain. And now their cholesterol levels are normal. Their insulin resistance is improved. They're off their blood pressure medications. They're down 20 pounds. And the joints don't hurt. And they come back just to say hi. These are fantastic visits.
Wow. I mean, that's perfect, right? In a perfect world, that's what you want a client to be able to do. What are some things that, if you gave someone three simple things to start to work on in terms of working towards that health and longevity? Because I think that's the hard thing, making it tangible, right? It's
from
overwhelming.
A physical fitness perspective?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, aerobic conditioning is so important. And what do I mean by that? I mean, for most people, walking work. We can't get past the fact that people who walk at least 6,000 steps a day live longer. And there's no top line rate limiting amount to that. Meaning, if you want to walk 12,000, you're getting additional benefit. There's no reverse J curve, as you'll hear about, especially on Instagram, with regards to aerobic conditioning when it's walking or fast-paced walking. Next is strength training. We need to push and pull heavy things. There's far too many people are really afraid of injury, but the rate of injury is really low. What we should fear are the risks of being sedentary, because the risks of being sedentary far outweigh the risk to us of being active in a gym with properly trained individuals. And next are things that we start to forget about, power and quickness and balance. So people think that we can't jump squat or sprint when we're 60. And that's nonsense. We have lots of different muscle fibers, as we know, and those muscle fibers do different things. And let's not forget that falls are a leading cause of death. It might not be the fall. You didn't die from the fall itself, but you fell. You spent a week in bed. Now you have less muscle, less fitness. You go back out there. Your baseline is low. You fall again. Less fitness, pneumonia, this, hospitalization, dead. What's going to stop people from falling? Not only is it strength, but it's power and quickness. It's being able to rapidly move yourself forward, put that foot forward quickly to stop yourself and have the power and strength so that you remain upright. And along with that is training that same power and quickness in, with single leg varieties and some rotation as well. So we're getting a balanced component to that.
Yeah.
So these are my types of prescriptions that I'm handing out to people.
Pause. I gotta fix that light.
I knew that was gonna get you. So you recently wrote two great articles about muscle mass and longevity. And we'd love for you to talk about those, because every day we try to teach our clients about how important muscle mass is, and we'd love for you to help us explain that.
Awesome. Well, muscle mass has a tremendous effect on our overall health. There's no getting around that. And it works to our detriment significantly after the age of 60 with regards to injuries from falls. Falls account for a major cause of death and disability because we fall, we rest, we get weaker, we lose more muscle, lower baseline, we fall, etc. So a lot of people think that muscle mass is just about how we look. It's not. It is when you're your age, not at my age. big difference. And muscle mass has its benefits in helping us to navigate the landscape, right? We have to get around. We have to get up and down stairs. We have to be able to carry packages. We have to be able to lift our spouse's suitcase up to the rack when it weighs 50 pounds exactly. And we want to look, if you're a gardener, you're going to carry mulch to the backyard. How long do you want to be able to do that? So these are the activities that I think about when I determine how I'm going to train, what I'm going to do. What people don't understand is that muscle mass is also key to our longevity for metabolic purposes. So our muscle is the number one store of glucose or glycogen in our body. So we store glucose as glycogen. Glucose is pretty toxic, which is why it's so heavily regulated in our body. I mean, we actually only have about a teaspoon of glucose that's floating through our blood right now. And if levels go higher, we get very sick. So our body has to tightly regulate those levels. The two main areas where it seeks to store it are the liver and the muscle. Muscle mass is obviously a lot larger in size than the liver.
Yeah.
And now a lot of people have heard about insulin resistance or type 2 diabetes, which is insulin resistance to an extreme. And that means that when we take in glucose via drink or food, we process it, we absorb it, and now our body needs to move it into the muscle. It's not a passive activity. So we have insulin that triggers a receptor on the muscle cell, and that receptor opens this channel and allows the glucose in. In people who are sedentary and have poor health, they have insulin resistance, meaning it's going to take more insulin to push that sugar into the muscle cell. Eventually, that insulin just stops working very well and it can't function. So we have a lot of trouble pushing the glucose into the muscle cell, so the glucose stays in our bloodstream, our blood sugar rises. That's why we see an elevation in A1C. So our hemoglobin A1C gives us an average of our last 90 days of blood glucose. All right, so if you have an A1C over 6, you're insulin resistant. And you could be insulin resistant even before your A1C rises, which is why I like to test people's fasting insulin levels in the office, because you'll see double-digit levels of fasting insulin before you'll see an A1C rise. So now we see glucose is not being processed well, so it circulates in the blood. So the liver now has to deal with it. The liver can only hold so much, so it turns it into other substances, mainly fat. So we as humans were engineered to live in a world of feast and famine, not in the world where food is available to us all day long. So our bodies are fantastic. Efficient in storing energy for later use, and that is our fat system. But that leads to problems because everyone has heard of visceral fat, which is fat around our organs. That's a very toxic fat, as opposed to fat in our extremities is actually not toxic at all. So if you see people with large legs, large arms, large subcutaneous fat deposits, they may not be unhealthy, metabolically speaking. You see people with thin legs and big bellies, they are going to be very unhealthy from a metabolic perspective. So insulin resistance will lead to fatty liver, a visceral fat burden, which increases inflammation. Chronic inflammation in our body has numerous downstream effects, one of which is it makes sarcopenia, or the loss of muscle mass, worse. So we start to lose 1% to 3% of muscle mass per year in our 30s. That ramps up to 3% to 8% sometimes, depending on how sick we are after our 60s. Just at the time when we need it the most, we are losing the most of it.
So how do you combat that? With, I mean, it's pretty simple, but...
It is. Listen,
not always that simple, but...
If you stream through Instagram, you're going to think that you can stay alive by subscribing to all these supplement feeds and crazy diets. And nothing could be further from the truth. Exercise is your best way of holding off a lot of metabolic disease and a lot of the downstream consequences of poor metabolic health, poor muscle mass, poor balance, poor power and quickness. There's no escaping it.
And people are very fat obsessed. Meanwhile, if they just really love their muscle more, they take care of a lot of
That's exactly problems. Right. We need to push and pull a lot of heavy things on two legs, on one leg, while we're turning and twisting. We shouldn't be afraid of falling over, looking bad in a gym. Other people are falling over too. We're all not as perfect as the videos that we see on Instagram.
And I think Instagram shows all like the fancy exercises, or like you said, the fads and the pills and the supplements, but people just need very simple, consistent strength training, and strength training that actually makes you stronger, not just doing it the same weight that you did 3 years ago and you're like, oh, this is me strength training.
Correct. And a lot of what's on Instagram is also performance. That's half the reason why I put my videos up there, because they're not perfect. Mm-hmm. Especially on balance component exercise, I'm falling all over. And that's good.
Yeah, that's normal. Your body learns.
It's training, right? And I look at these calisthenic experts on Instagram. I'm impressed, but 0.01% of people in the world can do that stuff. So we shouldn't feel bad because we can't.
I think a lot of people that we get, and a lot of people that you may see also, are the same people that say, hey, I know I need to strength train, but I have arthritis in my knee and my knee hurts, or I'm afraid to run because that might make my arthritis worse. I think that's the biggest thing that we need to navigate around. It's like, how do we help people and show people that you can train in the presence of pain or injury or a diagnosis that might sound really scary?
No, that's a tremendous question. When I have someone in my office who comes in, knee pain, shoulder pain, I'll ask them why they're here, and they'll say, my right shoulder hurt. Great. But I immediately dive deep. So are you here because you have the pain and you're afraid that you're going to make it worse? Or are you here because the pain is so bad that you can't work out and do the things you want to do? 8 out of 10 times, that person is going to say, I don't want to make it.
Yeah.
But I don't think we ask that question. And we need to, because that changes the whole tenor of the conversation and the visit. Now it's going to be far more educational than anything else, as opposed to the person who can't sleep at night, they're miserable, et cetera, right? You need to help them out of extremists. But modern medicine even, and many physicians, misunderstand what osteoarthritis is and how to manage it. And they also misunderstand a lot of findings that we have on our MRI, right? Half the things on MRIs that are read as tears aren't tears. They're age-appropriate changes. If you wore a pair of blue jeans for 15 years and you look down at the knee and there's a little hole there because you felt a breeze, are you going to say you tore your jeans? No. You're going to say they wore out. If you're walking by a construction project and you snag those jeans on a piece of metal and you rip a hole in them, you're going to say you tore your jeans. Tears imply trauma, injury, yet frequently there isn't, right? The majority of joint pain that you see in your clinic here, not precipitated by injury. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is. The majority of the time, it's not. So a lot of people curtail activities by things that they read on the MRI report. They get very scared about it. And arthritis is the big one. So the number one leading cause of osteoarthritis is age. So none of us are going to escape. Genetics is also a cause, as is poor metabolic health, right? Cartilage is a soft, rubbery substance that's in our joints, and it's what allows us to move them without friction and discomfort. But cartilage, we have a certain thickness to it. It can become thinner over time. Again, age, failure of repair mechanisms, poor health, and more. And if it gets thinner and thinner, then your arthritis is getting worse and worse. But this occurs very slowly. Cartilage is fed by synovial joint fluid. So the fluid, it has no blood supply. So the joint fluid in our joints is giving nutrition to the cartilage. So for every step that we take, we push that fluid into the cartilage. Now, in the perfect world, it'll see glucose and all sorts of friendly chemicals and cytokine. But in our real world, poor metabolic health and conditioning, we have a lot of inflammatory mediators and toxic chemicals that are floating around our body. Those get into our joint fluid too. So cartilage is going to be exposed to it. So they will develop worsening arthritis and arthritic symptoms in relationship to it. Now, what fixes our metabolic health? Exercise. Cartilage actually likes the cyclical loading of activity. It doesn't dislike it. And let's get something straight out of the way. Running does not cause arthritis. Running does not make arthritis worse. If people have some arthritis in their knees, they should continue running. Because if they stop running, if they're like most runners, I'm a runner, it completes us. We feel whole when we're running. It's our happy place, right? Don't take that away from us. And with weight training, the stronger your muscle groups are and the better that they function from a neuromuscular perspective, the better coordinated your motions are, the less pain that you're going to have when you have osteoarthritic joint. Now, look, everyone's going to get to a point in their life where the arthritis, not everyone, many people, where the arthritis might become severe that they just can't exercise. It hurts too much. This is the reason why we do joint replacement surgery. And so if this message doesn't resonate with you and you think I'm an idiot because you can't move, then it's time to talk to a surgeon. But if you're active and you're worried or afraid that you're going to make your joint worse, make the arthritis worse because of weight training or running, you're wrong. It will not.
That's really helpful, Howard. Hearing, your bone on bone sounds very scary, right? It's like, oh, there's no hope for me left. That's it. It's bone on bone. But really what you're saying is you're alive.
Yeah.
And if you stress it, you'll help it.
I run with people who have bone on bone arthritis. I've replaced knees in people who still have a fair amount of cartilage remaining. Your x-ray does not define you. We don't treat x-rays, we treat people. So there's plenty of people out there with bone-on-bone arthritis, but they have no swelling at all. The knee looks normal, except for some bone spurs that are popping out here and there. So they have very little discomfort. You have other people who have bone-on-bone, a lot of swelling, and they're miserable. It's the swelling, it's the inflammation, it's the synovitis that is causing the pain. It's not just the bone per se. So, your x-ray may show severe arthritis, but your symptoms are very mild. As I tell people who come in the office and they say, I'm 70, I need a knee replacement because I ran for so long. I said, no, you, because of your running, you kept your knees this long and probably would have needed it 15 years ago if you were less active. So flip the script.
What was the line that you said? I think one of my favorite posts from you was the thing about gray hairs.
The gray hair shoulder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So the post was telling someone that they have a labral tear is like telling someone that they might have gray hair. I think it referenced an age of, you know, 50 to 60. So as I alluded to, when I send someone for an MRI, and if I'm talking to, you know, a 40 or 50 something, I tell them, I said, this is what you're going to show. I'm going to ignore. I'm going to show these three or four things. We're looking specifically for this. I know you're going to get your MRI report and go to Google, but the only thing you should pay attention to is if we see this. Because the other things are just age-appropriate changes, gray hair, and they're just going to come naturally. So MRI reports can really scare people a lot.
Yeah.
And we all have labral tears on our shoulder at my age. Most of us have labral tears in our hip. And for the vast majority of people, they can be very safely ignored.
Yeah. Good on time.
10:42.
Yeah. I think one thing that we took from what you post and share and how we communicate it to our clients is if someone came in with knee pain and we asked them, they have knee pain with running, but they don't have knee pain from mile 0 to 2, but they have knee pain at mile 2. We're like, it's not a knee issue. It's a capacity issue.
Right.
So I think what we try to do is we're like, okay, this is the joints that you have. How can we make you more efficient? How can we teach you where to start safely and progress to where your goals want to be instead of saying, oh, because my knee started hurting at mile 2, now I have to do something about this, about
right.
my knee.
Right.
You probably just have to do something about your strength training and your conditioning and your metabolic health, right?
Right. And load management, right?
Yeah.
It's all a matter of how we apply load. Some of us are going to tolerate it really well, and some are going to tolerate it really poorly. And so we have to adjust our training as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So you yourself are a trail runner. Why do you...
I hate running on...
Yeah. Okay. So why do you love trail running and why is it so good for you?
I love trail running because every step is different. You're looking down, there's a rock, tree, an animal, creature, something. So you can be out on the trails. It's very easy to get lost, but just keep looking at your next, before you're done with 5 miles. Yeah. You don't even get a chance to look up the hill that's in front of you, because you have to look down at that step. And it's just a special, except for law. So aerobic conditioning is really one of the hallmarks of a proper approach to health. But it's really misunderstood. Yeah. When most of us are talking about aerobic training, we're talking of low heart training. Buzzfeed in the world is zone 2 training. But there are some caveats, because you're a well-trained athlete, cyclist, runner, etc. You're not going to want your easy run for 2 hours. In zone 2, because it's a right. I have some friends who can push 220 watts on their bike.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty. So if they do that for 3 hours at 220 watts, that's a lot. So for professionals, they need zone 1, where the power up, lower their heart rate, lower. We'll call it a coffee ride or something. You just have a casual conversation on a long ride. But majority of people, this is what zone 2 training. Why do we recommend zone 2 or low high rate training? We talked a lot about metabolic health and fitness and how important it is, how it interplays with our musculoskeletal system. Well, the root cause of poor metabolic health is actually poorly functioning mitochondria. And the root of insulin resistance occurs at the mitochondrial level for that. So we see the changes in mitochondrial function before we see the change in insulin, before we see the rise in A1C, before we see the diagnosis of diabetes and all the manifestations that flow from that. How do we train mitochondria? Aerobic fit. Long, sustained, low heart rate effort. Long, when I say long, you know, optimally, 90 to 120 minutes, once a week is a great session. 30-minute zone 2 training sessions, is it good? Yes. Any movement is great. I'm not going to take that away from you. If you're looking to optimize your health and mitochondrial function, your mitochondria need these long sessions to stimulate them enough for adaptation. Low heart rate training will increase your mitochondrial number, increase the inner lining of the mitochondria is undulated. So it increases that undulation. It increases the number of enzyme complexes that are on that inner line. So we're increasing the surface area through which we can have all these interactions. So we're improving the mitochondrial efficiency as well. Higher heart at the lactic threshold are necessary to get certain adaptations as well. More on the lactate side, right? The lactate shuttle, we could talk about separately. But if we're talking about metabolic fitness, we're talking about mitochondrial health. To train mitochondrial health, it's low heart exercise. There's a common saying, most runners run too fast on their slow days and too slow on their fast. They're stuck in this moderate intensity. If you're huffing and puffing and short of breath, sweating boatloads during zone 2 run, you're not. The talk test is very useful. I can talk to friends for the heart. It's not zone 2. Yeah. You're a very experienced runner or cyclist. You can feel to a large degree. You know, your RRP, your rate of perceived exertion, you can really dial into it. But this is where I think that lactate testing and metabolic heart testing can really help you. Because especially, you know, if you're a sprinter, if you love HIT, you love to throw up on a Peloton ride, your high and heart rate work is well trained. You can look up deficiency syndrome, great book. It's easy to understand. So if we're focusing all our work in the high intensity domain, we don't have well functioning. We have a great lactate shuttle. Our heart is, our stroke volume, our heart health is, but not down at the mitochondrial level. So we really need to focus a lot on a few hours a week, if possible, of low heart rate exercise. And again, a lot lower heart.
Right now there is a fad. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's when you bring the incline to the top on the treadmill and then you walk at like a 3.0 speed. And I am part of a commercial gym that's close to home, and that's where I walk. And right now, you know, it's the new year. Everyone's trying to lose weight. You see all these people cranking up on the incline and holding on for dear life right to this treadmill. And they're going, I'm like, oh, if only you got the testing, actually knew what your heart rate was. Like, you're wasting your time, really, because you're doing too much. Like, I see what you're trying to do, but you're not doing the thing you're actually trying to do. You're still doing too much, to your point. And the more people hear things like this, or it's like, okay, that's a great fad. Sure, you're burning a lot of calories, but is it really helping you how you're spending your time?
Yeah, you know, I always ask people, I started my book, what are you trying to optimize? Right? So if you are a podium level runner, go ahead. Do that. If you're a power lifter, right? This, to adapt our training regimen accordingly. But for most people, for 90% of us who are not aerobically efficient, who are aerodeficient, that's not strong. But if they did that once a week, that's awesome. But the other 4 days, you know, that they exercise, that treadmill should be flat and they should.
Everyone hear that?
But I think that's also the thing with like social media, right? It's like these fads or challenges or set parameters that someone puts out there and says, hey, you have to do it this way, at this incline, at this speed. But the people that we work with who are in pain, it's like everything has to be very individualized, right? Or else you are going to keep running into the same pain or the same issues or the same inability to complete that challenge that you want to do on it. So,
and you and I both know now, how that's not going to end well for many people. Walking at a 12% grade, poor strength and poor coordination and condition.
Yeah.
Continue knee pain.
Cool. I'm keeping like a visual memory in my head of how many people I'm still going to see, how many drop off as flies.
But I think that's why people need to hear this message more. Really? It's like, you know, people make it too complex, and that's why I love the name of your book. It's like, right. It's simplified. It's like, these are things that everyone can do and everyone can start with. And I think the more people that are exposed to that and accept that it doesn't have to be crazy, the better we all are.
100%.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. You really help us out because we're really trying to make people feel safe every day, and this education helps us help people feel more reassured that they're on the right path.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I also really appreciate how much you're doing.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Reload's Move Without Limits podcast. I hope listening today has resonated with you, helped, and inspired you to take action. See the notes in the description for a rundown of the episode with all the important links.
If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share this with a friend and tag us on Instagram at reload.pt.
We love feedback and would be so grateful if you could write a review. It really helps us out.
For more information of our services and events, you can go to our website at www.reloadpt.com or find us on YouTube.
Enjoy your day and talk soon.